College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
Happy New Year. Fun season of bowl games. Thought the Fiesta and the Rose delivered. Sugar Bowl had a handful of storylines. Several Georgia players out. George Pickens taking over. Matt Rule's coaching future, a big topic the last couple days. Really pumped up about today's show. I don't think he needs a big introduction since he's well known for a variety of reasons. My favorite one is his comeback story as it continues, especially this past season when he joined our team at ESPN as a college football analyst on games and in studio. Ryan Leaf joining us here on the Herb Street and Pollock podcast. A year ago, you were sneaking into the Rose Bowl with Kirk Herbstreit using a pass of a tall, dark, and handsome broadcaster, and now you just finished up your first season at ESPN. What's it been like for you, Ryan?
Well, it's been really special is what it's been. You were exactly right. It was just over a couple years ago where I was in a situation where I simply wanted to go shadow Kirk Herbstreit doing the Rose Bowl. And I didn't get in contact with anybody to get me a credential fast enough. So Herbie somehow had yours lying around. You had left, and we're sneaking in like we're sneaking into a bar when we're 18 years old, trying to get me into, I got the best college football analyst in the world next to me, and we're still sneaking me in. I had to put my thumb over your picture and just show the black hair, and somehow we got in so I could shadow Herbie that day.
I love that story. I didn't even know anything about it until you shared that at the college football, you know, when we have our annual journey where we all have a camp and everybody comes together in August, and it's the college football summit. We get ready for the season. You went up on stage and you shared your story and how excited you were. And I thought you fit in perfectly. You slid right into your role as a guy that was an analyst, but also calling games. And when you get the chance to call games, you get to see things from a different perspective. And we really don't have a lot of your perspective. And I'm saying that from a Pac-12 angle as a quarterback that was in that conference, that understands that style of football, kind of weigh in strongly here at ESPN and calling games. When you look at what you do and what you bring to the table, what separates you, I think, from other analysts?
Well, for me, I walked into the business really wanting to call a game like I was sitting next to you on the couch, like my dad and I were sitting on the couch watching the game together. That's what we've been doing for years. And he was almost always like my play-by-play guy. You know, he'd mention what down and distance it is and the score and things like that. And I would comment on what just played out. And my play-by-play partner this year was Clay Matthick, and we kind of fit that role. Even though we were close in age, he felt like a guy that I could relate to in that terms. He called the plays, what was going on, and I had fun, you know, was self-deprecating and wasn't super critical of guys because I know what that felt like. I just wanted to tell you what happened. Any viewer out there was watching the game, I wanted them to feel like I was sitting next to them and we were just, you know, enjoying watching the game together and bantering back and forth.
You mentioned, I know what that feels like. Would you pay attention to all that stuff when you were in college, when you went to the NFL and who was saying what about you?
You like to say you don't, but everybody hears what's going on. And this day and age, especially with the fact that ESPN is such a large platform. And when I got the job here, I knew that. I knew what guys were picking us to finish on College Game Day in the morning on Saturdays. I knew what they were saying about our football team. So yeah, it plays a role. So I never want to be super critical. These kids are playing a game, having fun. They're not getting paid for it. It'd be probably a little different if I was commentating and analyzing the NFL just because I know what kind of difference that is. But for me, I want it to be fun, lighthearted, and really just really showcase the wonder of college football because I think it's the best thing that there is. It gave me everything. And for me to be a part of it is huge.
I love that perspective. And before we, I don't want to go down a wormhole, but before we go into the college football angle, you said something a few weeks ago on your Twitter account, which I was like, wow, this is on point, where you said you wish you could talk to Baker Mayfield. Like, what would you say to a guy like that and what he's gone through in the last, you know, his two seasons with the Browns and trying to figure things out? Where you see the highs. And those are really big highs, and now you're on the commercials everywhere you go, and then you deal with all the setbacks this past season. What would you say to him in handling things as a franchise quarterback?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, right? Like what's really worked for him his whole career is taking things personally and kind of having that chip on your shoulder. But guess what? You're the first pick in the NFL draft. You're the Heisman Trophy winner. That's no longer the case. You deserve to be there. You belong there. Now act accordingly. And that's always the issue for me too, where I always felt like I was the underdog, or I was not, and maybe not supposed to be there, and I need to prove people wrong. And when people talked down to me or questioned me or didn't believe in me, I had to throw it back in their face. And that certainly isn't the case. It costs you nothing to be self-deprecating, to be vulnerable, to be transparent. It doesn't cost you anything. Now, don't get me wrong. You have to go play. You have to be successful too, because, you know, some of the best guys in the whole world in terms of personality and individuals as human beings, didn't make it in the NFL because they simply couldn't cut it by playing at the highest level. Now, if you can go follow that up, you don't have to be the best individual, you know, and for me, I just simply want to be able to sit in front of them and say, hey, this is what went wrong for me. And you may already think you know that, but I want to give you something tangible that actually showcased that, because you know what? I was sitting exactly in the same spot you were. We identical, you know. You've had a much more successful early run in the NFL, you know, rookie of the year and what they've done. But, you know, what's transpired this year in year two was tantamount to him not even playing in year two, to be honest with you. It was a regression. And now they're in a situation where he's going on to his third, possibly his fourth head coach because of the interim tag a year ago in his third year.
It's crazy to think about that too. You know, we know it starts with quarterbacks and it starts with how they handle adversity. And you and I were on the sidelines at Fiesta and watching Clemson deal with adversity, watching Ohio State handle that adversity and then come back, and both teams, it felt like a 15 round fight. You know, early on in the scorecard, it was Ohio State dominating the rounds, and then Clemson came back and had a couple nice punches to separate themselves, and it went all the way down to the wire. And I love an environment like that. For you, when you're watching Trevor Lawrence, when you're watching Justin Fields, what are you looking for from quarterbacks like that, that are franchise quarterbacks at the college level, and you know they're going to be franchise quarterbacks on the next level in the NFL?
You know, I was really interested to see how they were going to deal with the adversity. My biggest question mark for Clemson in that game is what happened in the third quarter or early in the game if they get hit in the mouth and they're down. And I heard an analogy earlier this week about when you taste blood in your mouth for the first time after kind of getting popped in the face, and yep, that taste kind of just awakening you. And you and I were standing right there on the sideline when Trevor Lawrence took the shot to the head in the targeting, and you have the star player laying on the field. It looked like the air was just sucked out of the stadium in terms of what Clemson was doing. And then you watch him rise, jog off, run off the field. And there was something palpable that came through that Clemson sideline, and we could feel it. And then when they scored with ATN on the drive at the end, and then when they called his number, they scored 14 points in the last 3 minutes and 55 seconds of that game right after that targeting penalty. That was something that needed to happen for that team to see the re-energized version of Trevor Lawrence, because it felt for a little while like they just didn't know what hit them. You know, there was an overwhelming feeling of having to deal with that speed of Ohio State, and Fields on the other end was feeling all the good that comes with it, and he had to deal with adversity late. He came back from it too. So it was an awesome, awesome chance for both of you and I to watch it play out in real time, seeing two guys that are probably going to play at the next level and be really good deal with adversity in the highest level of a game you can imagine and finish.
You know, the best part of that game for me was all the Sunday talent on the field all making an impact. Like, I mean, from Dobbins to Chase Young to, you know, Okuda to ETN, you know, the wide receivers for Clemson, they were shut down to a certain extent, but then to see Lawrence step up, to me, I just love seeing stars find a way to step up in the big moments. And I got to give all the credit in the world to J.K. Dobbins. I knew he was a special talent, but when you're watching him on the field, it felt like the way that game was being played out, he makes that one catch on the screen, that's a touchdown, and Ohio State's lead is to a point where you're like, this could be insurmountable. And if he doesn't get injured in the second half, and he still plays, and he plays well, he doesn't get injured, I think the Buckeyes win the game.
Well, there's a lot of things that, you know, ifs were candy and nuts, you know, we all have a wonderful Christmas too. So it is what it is. you have to go and play. And he did. Dobbins did everything he was asked of him. He did drop a couple big passes, right? The one in the end zone for the touchdown, the one on the screen play on the blitz that would have really put a dagger in what you were considering Clemson's chances. But the game played out how the game played out. He was as good as any running back out there. You were right. The Sunday talent showed up, you know, especially at corner for Ohio State, Acuna and what they were able to do. They shut down probably the best wide receivers in the business, right? They shut down Justin Ross. They shut down T. Higgins. Those guys are going to have to be huge in the LSU game here in a couple weeks. If Clemson, thinks they're going to win that game, and they got shut down and they had to look for other ways. That was what's so cool about what Clemson did in that game is like, their leading rusher was their quarterback who hadn't been the guy all year long, and it was Travis Etienne. And guess what? Their leading receiver was that running back, Travis Etienne. So that's really special to see a team that wasn't necessarily able to do what they've been doing all year, but then find a way to beat an elite team.
Yeah, Buckeye fans are going to look back and just wonder about, I mean, Arnett was great, Okuda was great, and then if Sean Wade is still playing in that game, does Trevor Lawrence have the ability to run down the field the way he did and score that touchdown? A lot of what ifs playing out in front of us. And obviously, you know, the catch that people thought was a fumble that turned into a scoop and score that was overturned. A lot of questions about what's the replay rule? Does the rule need to be adjusted? They followed the letter of the law with the rule, but is it the right rule? And obviously that will be discussed at length, I think, for the next 7 to 8 months when the Buckeyes look back on this season. Now looking forward and moving forward with Clemson, getting ready for LSU, the quarterbacks will get the big names with Lawrence and, of course, Burrow. What's the one thing that you got circled here that you want to see in New Orleans in this matchup?
I want to see what this Clemson defense is going to do to stop Joe Burrow. That's going to be the key. They're going to have to turn him over. And in fact, not only turn him over, take it away at least two times. The only time that happened this year was against Ole Miss. He still threw five touchdowns in that game. So Justin Fields hadn't thrown more than one interception all year long. He threw two in the national semifinal. Probably could have had a couple more if they weren't dropped by the Clemson defenders. So it's all going to be about what Brent Venables can bring to the table. He's got the extra week to prepare. It's going to be special. Tanner Muse is going to be the guy I circle in the defensive end. A year ago in the national championship, he kind of got taken advantage of a little bit by Jerry Jeudy and in a man-to-man look. It's going to be all about matchups for what LSU can do. Can they use Justin Jefferson and put him on the slot, put him in the position to go against Tanner Muse, or are they going to allow Isaiah Simmons to do different things like he did in that national semifinal? Brent Venables having 2 weeks to prepare for that, that's going to be fun to watch.
When you watch Burrow on tape, what do you see from him as a quarterback, especially making that jump when we look at accuracy in that offense with Joe Brady, the passing game coordinator, coming in? I'm stunned with the accuracy numbers from last year to the season.
Well, also not just the accuracy, but his willingness to throw balls into traffic, knowing that he has the faith in those wide receivers, Jefferson, Chase, Moss, all of them, being able to catch the football. And they do. If you look at all the catches against Oklahoma, a ton of them were contested. Some of them he just kind of threw up there. He has so much belief in his receivers to make plays, and they do, which builds his completion percentage. Reminds me a ton of Tom Brady. And that makes sense, right? Guys who are playing in this day and age for the last 20 years have emulated who the best at the next level has been, and that's been Tom Brady. I mean, he stands in the pocket, very confident, doesn't move a lot, just uses his feet, gets the ball out quickly, accurately, and if there's pressure, he knows where to go with it. And I think that's what makes him so special.
Who do you got in a game like this?
Well, it's always hard, right? I mean, I've been riding the Clemson Tiger train since August. You know, I spent 3 days with Dabo and that staff and that team, and I drank the Kool-Aid, I guess. But there's something about being there, and there's something palpable that reverberates from the place. And then I've had them as my number one team since August, no matter what. Not because they won it last year, because I thought they were the best football team in the country. And when you came down the line and you saw what LSU did during the season and all the great teams they beat along the way, you're like, well, LSU deserves to be there. And they might rightfully so deserve to be there, but I still think Clemson's the best team. And I think they're going to have the better game plan, and I think they have more explosive players on offense, and they just weren't seen that much this year, like how LSU was when they were on national TV. And sometimes a season of destiny doesn't always finish, you know, with a championship. My year, Emmanuel Acho, who I just did a college football playoff show with, their year, sometimes it doesn't work. Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks have not won a national championship in the college football playoff era. The last person to do that, Jameis Winston, in the BCS era, to win the Heisman and the national championship in the same year.
Ryan, you've been around a lot of football programs. You've been around a lot of football coaches. I think you have a BS meter that can sense if somebody's coming in and just giving you something and you're like, well, yeah, come on, you're just saying this to 18 to 22-year-olds that you wouldn't be this way with adults, like outside of the college football world. What is different about Dabo? What is different from your perspective when you go and you're around that program that separates Dabo and what he's doing in that culture compared to every other program that you've talked to and coaches that you've, had conversations with?
Well, there's something about adversity with him, right? Being the interim coach, fighting his way through, and he's got real issues with his family, right? I mean, he's got a younger brother that spent some time in prison, and he's helped cultivate that. I came on the scene around that time. His players have seen him deal with things in a healthy, positive way. That's special. And there's faith-based to it. Now, I'm not a big religious person. I'm a spiritual person. I believe there's something greater than me out there. And he really brings the faith-based lifestyle to that environment, and it's family. Like when I spent those 3 days there, his coaches' families were all around. The facility is a place where you don't want to leave it. The kids don't want to leave it. They go to class, yes, but then when they have any time, time on their own, it's there together. They are as close knit as they could be. And he's got a plan, right? They don't bring in transfers. They don't bring in grad transfers. They don't bring in JC transfers. They're guys from the get go. They are Clemson guys that they go and get and who will be there. Now, some have transferred because they need to, but they have not brought them in. It's different. They're not going to let somebody else come in and infect what they put together. And these guys follow Dabo Swinney and everything he says.
And it shows, too, that he doesn't have a lot of defections when it comes to his coaching staff. I mean, that is something that has plagued Alabama. When you're a successful program, coaches are wanted. Coaches are in demand, and coaches come and go. And the one thing that stuns me is how Clemson can retain the coaches. They are there. They are part of the program. I'm not saying one is right, one is wrong. It's just something that stands out factually where you're like, well, Clemson doesn't lose guys, especially when you have like Venables.
Well, they also got guys that maybe just don't want to be a head coach. I've talked to Brent Venables plenty of times. And, he's the highest paid defensive coordinator, I think, in the country. And mm-hmm. He doesn't have to deal with all the responsibilities. I talked to him right after the game on Saturday when we were there. Everybody else is up on the stage. Dabo's got to do all his stuff, the media requirements and everything like that. And there's Brent Venables behind everybody, back watching it all play out. And that's where I walked up to him. I gave him a hug and told him, great game, coach. And I was able to talk to him like he doesn't have to deal with all that stuff. He's just got to coach up his defensive players. Because there's plenty of times that I think, athletic directors have been calling and pounding down his door to come coach their program because he'd be great at it. But some of the guys are just content with being champion, and that's what Clemson's been able to present. And I suspect over the next decade, what we saw at Alabama over the last decade, that's what Clemson's going to be this next decade. And they have a chance on the 13th of January to win their 30th consecutive game for their second consecutive national championship. And that would make them, I think, arguably the best team in the country or of all time when you're talking about college football.
You can have a strong case that if they beat LSU, that they could tell anybody, this is the best 2-year run in the history of college football. And I'm sure historians will come in and match something up, but at least they are in the conversation if they were to win in New Orleans, especially with that LSU dominated fan base. And I think that we're going to see in the Superdome. I can't wait for that on January 13th. And we'll be back in just a moment with much more from Ryan Leaf. But first, a word from Allstate.
Because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today.
Another program that I think is going to turn the corner here, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, and that is Oregon. When I say turn the corner, it's just what Mario Cristobal has done with changing the identity of the program and, you know, the chance to watch at the Rose Bowl and what he's done. For me, I thought it was a great game, but it was really important for Oregon to win that game for the Pac-12.
Just for the national conversation or the landscape, the Pac-12 for the third consecutive year being left out of the college football playoff, it says something. Now, that all can change next year if Oregon does their thing and upsets Ohio State in week two, and all of a sudden they're off and running and they're back into the college football playoff. But it says something, because I think the Rose Bowl, other than the two national semifinals and the national championship, still is a bowl game that exists where people take note, you know, who wins it, who's playing in it. Both teams, Oregon and Wisconsin. Wisconsin loses the conference championship, gets in. Oregon could have lost the conference championship and still gotten in. So for some, it may not have been the matchup they were looking for, but it was special. And to see Justin Herbert decide to spurn the NFL, come back, set those goals to win the Pac-12 championship, to win a Rose Bowl and accomplish that, it's got to be really special for the young man now that he's going to enter the NFL draft and see what's next.
And the physicality that you saw from the Oregon line, both offense and defense, again, it's just different from the identity that we knew earlier in the decade from the Ducks and the offense from Chip Kelly. And I think it's Cristobal is doing something really special in Eugene and setting that up. Does it bug you how the country views the Pac-12 sometimes to a certain extent, especially during bowl season?
Yeah. I mean, I played in the conference. You know, they don't help themselves that much. You know, they decided to go their own way when it comes to their network, the content that they put out there. They've had some opportunities to do some things differently. There was a 9 a.m. Pacific kickoff time that there was discussed this year, and they decided not to go with it. I think that would have benefited some to get their product out there in front of more people and show them how fun and entertaining it is. I think they did really well in the bowl games. They went 4-3. I thought that was pretty good. I don't necessarily feel too bad, because I think they're still a good product. I call it the conference of cannibalism. They're just really competitive, I think, and they beat each other up. And, nine conference games plus a 10th with the conference championship. I mean, unless there's some consequences against, let's say, the ACC and the SEC to change, I think that the other conferences have to go the other way, right? They got to play on the 8, because if Oregon doesn't have to play Arizona State, instead it's playing Samford or somebody or the Citadel in that week, we're talking about an Oregon team probably in the college football playoff.
Before we let you go here, we're watching the game. We talked a little bit about it earlier on the podcast. We're watching this game, and we're watching Clemson and Ohio State back and forth. And I love how transparent you are and how candid you are about things. But still, and I know your history. I've had the chance to talk to you several times on SportsCenter through the years and your journey. But you were so candid about one topic, and I just sat there and I was like, wow, we were talking about your time in jail, in prison, and this concept of what you had to do in prison. And are you okay with expanding a little bit about that journey and where you were a few years ago to where you are right now? Because I know you do some reflection on Twitter when you look at your family and the growth of your family and what you want big term, long term plans. Like, could you have ever imagined that you would be in this position when you were in prison on those dark days?
Oh gosh, no, Kevin. I mean, 6 years ago, I was in a prison cell, right? And And I thought I was hopeless. You know, even when I walked out of prison, I didn't know what was ahead. I had developed this hope because of the things I had done in prison, and that was to be of service to other people, people that couldn't give me anything, right? That I was just helping another human being, and that transformed how I looked at things. That still didn't mean I was going to have any success. You would not know that would play out, especially in the form of me, you know, working for the Disney Corporation. I mean, that was the furthest thing from my mind. The only thing I wanted to do was stay clean, stay out of jail, and be a productive member of my community, something I didn't think I had been my whole life. And it was going to be about the service of others. And that's where it started. It started in a sober living environment in Los Angeles, helping individuals who, you know, didn't quite know what their life was going to look like. They had some hope and they didn't know where it was going to go. And it starts with one step, and then you keep taking those steps and you do the same thing over and over. And then someday you get a call from ESPN and they say, hey, would you like a job doing something that you'd love to do your whole life? And that's call football games. I remember when I got out of prison and I kind of put together a goal sheet of what I wanted to do. And, you know, one of them was like, I'd love to do what Kirk Herbstreit does. I mean, who wouldn't? But I mean, that would be a dream for me, right? To talk about the game that gave me everything and that I love, and then to travel around the country and be around these beautiful cathedrals, cathedral-like stadiums, and the players and the coaches and the atmosphere and the pageantry and all of it. You're telling me that's a possibility? Well, this is how it starts, right? You reach out to people that you feel like you may have burned bridges a long time ago. Turns out you didn't. Turns out they care about you. They want what's best for you. And you ask the likes of Kirk Herbstreit, or Brady Quinn, Greg McElroy. You ask those guys, hey, can I come watch how you guys do this and see if A, I could do it and B, could I be any good at it? You know, and I answered those two things and it's about showing up. And that's how it turns out I got the job, because of my preparation and my engagement when I went and shadowed Greg McElroy and some of the higher ups here at ESPN, talked to the director, the producer, and Pash and McElroy both said, you know, wow, the guy knew his stuff, was engaging, could have been right in the mix. And sure enough, I got that call. So sometimes you have no idea who your referral is going to be. It's about how you treat other people. And those were things I didn't do well. You know, it was always about me. And I knew that when I got out of prison, that at no point any further could it ever be about me again. Now, that's an easier thing to say than do. You have to practice that in your life. And then when you have a child and that comes about, that puts it into motion completely, right? It's all about somebody else. It has nothing to do with mm-hmm. you. And I think that's kept me going in the right direction. And then what was so cool about that Saturday in Phoenix with you and everybody else, a lot of the guys that I met at the seminar and I was really looking forward to working with and being peers with, I didn't get to see the whole year because I was traveling the country working on games. And we all stood around on that sideline. We all watched what was one of the coolest things in the world, to see two great teams play. And we got to know each other better. And I think that's the best thing about all this. And I certainly wouldn't have had that capability, you know, back in the day when I was that different version of myself, because I just wouldn't have been open to talking to somebody and asking about their life and their family and how they're doing. I was always about, hey, telling you how special I was. And that's certainly not the life I want to lead anymore.
Well, Ryan, we are lucky to call you a teammate. It's been great seeing you on this journey continue to grow. I'm glad you snuck into that Rose Bowl that day with Kirk Herbstreit and got the chance to follow Herbie. Herbie's great. And honestly, thank you for joining us here on the podcast. I know you got other things to do, but you carved out some time between TV and your other radio gig. And once again, man, happy new year. I'm sure I'll talk to you in New Orleans.
You bet, Kevin. Thanks for having me on.
Big thank you to Ryan Lee for joining us there and sharing his story in a variety of topics. I think he has such a unique perspective and he gave us a great message, I think, for 2020. I also want to thank our sponsors here today on the podcast, and that is Allstate. Excellent work from our producer, Taylor Schwenk. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want more, all you have to do is subscribe to the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Polk. And of course, remember to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. And, you know, trust me, next week, we've got a big week. I think we've got Pollock, Herb Street, Fowler, who's going to be calling the game. He's going to share his story, Manuel Acho. So we've got a lot of good stuff getting ready for New Orleans. Before we get out of here, be sure to check out today's episode of ESPN Daily as we head into Wild Card Weekend. Mina Kimes gets into one of her favorite topics, and that is Russell Wilson. It's about his evolution, how the outside world perceives him, and why he doesn't care what you think about him. Get it wherever you listen to your podcast. That is ESPN Daily with Mina Kimes.